The following podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network is
provided by Vision Automotive.
Good day, everybody. Welcome one more time to this edition. That's our pause edition of Moving the Needle. We are so grateful that you are here today. I am Pastor Sebron O. Johnson, and we have with us...
I am Dr. Paul Miller, and we're back here for another episode of Moving the Needle. And I know we're talking about where does the healing start? And I think before we get to the healing, we're probably going to have to talk about what some of the issues we need to heal on, and then how do we get to it?
You know what? That's so true. We can't try to heal something in the wound hasn't even been dealt with and exposed, and let's see what's going on. So maybe that this Alpha and this Omega can wrestle for the next few minutes and try to deal with some of that stuff, expose this wound so that we can clean it out. So I'm going to throw this at you, Dr. Miller. The first thing I notice is, in general, systems aren't fair to charter schools. I know that there is a myth out there that there's a bunch of just rich white people that are starting charter schools, and they're getting richer off of the backs of charter schools, and charter schools have all this money, and there's this myth that the parents are so much more involved all the time, and you get the best students from the districts, and so the life is so much easier, and all taxpayer dollars are going to charter schools, and charter schools just have an embarrassment of riches. But for those of us who've been in this, we know that's not true, that we have to struggle, and there's a lot that we have to go through that's just not fair. And so I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about the unfairness that you see with charter schools buying or acquiring buildings and what we might do there.
You know, a lot of unfair situations here, you know, as far as charter schools and the level of building equity, right? So let's start with the fact that there's no facility aid. There's no facility aid for charter schools that is anything that is upstate. So when I say upstate, anything past the New York City lines gets no facility aid. Within New York City area, they get about $2,700 per child, or they get access to a building for free. So if you don't use the building access, you get the $2,700 per child. So, you know, even add up 2,700 times 8,500 kids, that's somewhere around 24 million. You know, and I'm no mathematician, but somewhere around there, that's a lot of money.
But Albany, Syracuse, Buffalo, Rochester, no.
None of the other major cities, Poughkeepsie, what's the other one? I don't know. They're somewhere still considered upstate.
Utica.
Utica. Yeah. None of us receive any of those funds. And so that's one of the biggest issues of an equal is why is New York City created its own state? And that has to do with politics and money, and somebody advocated for that to happen there, and they won, right? So we are taking on a lawsuit to fight against that. So Charter Champions is starting a lawsuit, and we're working with a former Supreme Court judge who is now our attorney to take this lawsuit on to try to get equitable funding.
And what's the ask there for that lawsuit?
So when you say
what are we asking them to do for us?
So we will be suing the state.
Okay.
To receive equitable funding based off, and just equitable doesn't always mean equal, right?
Right.
Because equal is like if I said, and so let's talk about equity and equal first, right?
Right, right, right.
So equal is like, okay, everybody in here gets a shoe.
Same thing.
So same size shoe, right? And then equity is, no, we all get a shoe that fits.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it would be a little bit different because the cost of living is a little higher. So they would be adjusted. But we're fighting for equity. We're fighting to, and really under the premise, and we're doing the research right now to say that New York City schools, charter schools, have even had the ability to perform better because they have the opportunity to have facilities that work.
Sure.
And since they have facilities that work, they also have more resources because they have more money because they have facilities. So we're shelling out money that we already get a lot less. So that's the other inequity here, is that we're getting a lot less on top of not having facilities. But when you talk about this building piece is when you look at even in Rochester, there's so many open schools, or they're going to be shutting down schools, but there are people fighting to make sure that they don't go to charter schools.
So I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. So charter schools are state funded, just like district schools are state funded. Yes. We get much less money per child than the district gets. But even if we're getting less money, 70% less, I'm sorry, less than 70%, less than 60%, even though we're getting less money, if my charter school has to go out and spend $3, $6, $8 million for a building, we don't get any added funds to get that. It has to come out of that 60% that we're getting.
Right, exactly. And that, so it's coming out of that money, or you have to go and borrow it, or you have to try to find philanthropic donors, or, you know, and that doesn't happen a lot. You know, some schools luck out, but you have to jump through all these hoops to have real estate. Which, again, think about, real estate has always been an issue. There's redlining. And you know, it's shame on some of these districts, because when I compare it to trying to keep the poor people with the poor people and the black people with the black people and not approving mortgages and other things. So, like, for example, when the city school district is saying, no, we're not going to let them utilize buildings or purchase their buildings, not even asking for it for free.
Right.
Isn't that a form of redlining?
Wow. So, again, I want to bring it out. So, because parents would say, and other leaders would say, wait a minute. Well, if perchance a school was closed in the district, then surely, because it's now available, then charters, why can't you just move in there and take that? But the truth of the matter is, those aren't even made available to charter schools to buy.
No, they won't allow us to keep it. They won't allow us to purchase it. They won't allow us to use it.
It's already a school.
Rent it. No, it's already a school, but they don't want us in them. And isn't that a form of redlining?
Sounds like redlining to me.
So again, it's systematic. Yeah. So how can we heal, and how can we do these things when there are people, and you know what, and it really bothers me that there are people in power who are people of color. You look at our mayor, you look at, you know, because our mayor, you look at our city council, you look at the city school district, there's people of color who are high up there.
School board.
Mm-hmm. Who are all against buildings going to charter schools. And if you ask them, are they in favor of redlining, they probably would say no. Wow. So I don't know. I have a real difficult time with that, and folks being that contradictory and that much hate, or that much because of an educational system that is now supporting kids and trying to make sure the kids are successful in doing a job and trying to do it well.
Wow. We calling it out. This unfair in terms of the building practices is not right. We got to do something about that. Let's look at another thing that's unfair. What about this whole transportation issue that charter schools don't have the same opportunities because, and please expound on it, but we have to go through the district to get transportation. And it has to go by the district schedule for charter schools to have their kids have been transported to charter schools, but we may not have the same start and end schedule.
Let's go back to the money. Right?
Okay.
So let's follow the money.
Follow the money.
Let's follow the money.
Okay.
We're following the money.
Yeah.
Let's say that the district is, do you know the per pupil allocation for the district? I think it's somewhere between $28,000 and $32,000 with all the other revenue that they have and receive. It's based on their budget.
Sure.
It makes it more. So between $40,000 and $45,000 a student they're spending. Right. Mm-hmm. So the charter school gets $14,000, $14,400, I think, per student in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
So then that other money is called transitional money. That transitional money stays with that homeschool district. So for people that don't know, we're trying to break it down, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say Sebrin is a Rochester resident and wants to come to a charter school. He would come to a charter school, and then the charter school would send a bill to the city school district. We would send the bill, and the city school district is supposed to pay out six times a year and break that $14,400 up over six billing periods.
Okay.
Pay periods. Also, they are supposed to not only break it down over these six times a year, they are supposed to get proofs of residency and all these other documentation that sometimes can be hard to keep up to date because Rochester is an impoverished city. And with it poverty, people move a lot, go through other struggles. But you got to give 30 days of proof of residency. And if you don't, city school district can deny your payments.
Mm.
So they're starting to put rules. They put rules in place to kind of deny payments. Now, if they deny the payment, they don't have to reconcile until the end of the school year.
Wow.
So you might miss.
Wow.
You might miss X amount of money. I remember when I got to Green Tech, and when I got to Green Tech initially, we were $90,000 short on payroll. Mm. And when I dug into why we were $90,000 short, we had a business manager who didn't have the right policies, procedures in place, so I had to let him go. Mm. But what ended up happening was, is what I saw, we would bill for $800,000, but we would only get $400,000.
Wow.
And so and we would get $400,000, and then how do you run and operate the school on half of the money that you're supposed to get when it's already two-thirds less than before? And I'm painting all this picture because that transitional money is supposed to be for transportation,
yeah,
right? So let's say it's whatever it is, that if they're keeping in Rochester City School District case, it's more than 70. It's they're keeping, I think we're only getting about 55 to 60 cents mm-hmm. on the dollar somewhere,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they're keeping 12 grand or whatever they're keeping. And they're keeping this 12 grand that's supposed to go towards special education and transportation.
Mm-hmm.
But now, and they control transportation, but controlling transportation means that we have to follow their rules and to make it obscenely hard to a school to operate on anything that's different to transport their kids. And that's all done because you want to make it inconvenient, because if I make it inconvenient enough, there's going to be some parents that say, you know what, I'm not sending my kid to that school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to send them back to you. So that money's there. Special education services. It has to do with, usually it has to do with PT and OT and some other support like that. So most of the charter schools will support a lot of their own special education needs.
Mm-hmm.
There are some that have people come in from the district and other things like that. The model that's usually favored is hiring your own SPED teachers mm-hmm. and then just getting the auxiliary supports like the OT, PT, which a lot of kids don't need. If you look at the special ed needs in our urban communities, a lot of them are ADHD, a lot of them are learning disabled, they're not getting the OT or the PT, physical mm-hmm. therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that money is not even being utilized. Or
wow.
that money, that transitional money that goes back to the school, that $12,000, let's say, what if my child is in special education?
Right.
That money still goes back there. I drop my child off and they don't receive transportation? That money still goes back to there.
Right.
There could be 30-40% of the kids that don't use transportation, and there's about 80-90% that aren't special ed.
Wow.
But that money still goes back. That's creating the inequities. And wow. that's part of the problem, but it's all done to try to give charter schools a hard time so that, again, they can go back to the traditional public school district.
Wow, that's crazy. So we're looking at the unfairness with buildings. We're showing this unfairness with transportation, all because of who controls the almighty dollar. But there's something else, man, I don't think we ever covered in the show. And this is a unique scenario that I know you're looking into. And that is the unfairness of a black and brown student to have been taught, educated, brought up by a black and brown teacher. In many cases, there are students who go years and never have had a black or brown teacher teach them in any class. That's rough. I'm talking about in a city that's majority minority, that when it comes to the schools, when it comes to those who are being taught, they may not run into in some time a black or brown teacher. That certainly was the case in my time. Now, I do know that you're doing a lot of work with the pipeline and recruitment. And as you walk through, and I invite anybody that want to make an appointment with a charter school, make that appointment and walk through and see the diversity of teachers in charter schools. Is that by accident? And is that something you're working on? Because it seemed to be unfair in my lifetime.
I think we're working on it intentionally. Like, that's mm-hmm. part of our strategy is to recruit more and retain more educators of color. And so we've put together a strategy to do that. Mm-hmm. And we want all educators in general, because there's such a shortage, but we specifically are targeting educators of color by where we're going, what we're doing, how mm-hmm. we're doing it. And the truth of it is there's still not enough in the charter
right.
schools.
Right.
And And when you ask, when I think about some of the things that the charter schools still can do better or do differently, I think it is looking for equitable hiring practices and looking to grow your own and build programs where people who don't have the proper certifications or credentials, we can work to grow our own and put them in the right places, the right times and the right opportunities, but working to develop folks. And on top of that, being real conscious with the decision, especially in leadership. You know, there's quite a few of our charter schools that the leadership has elected to, and some of them are doing an excellent job. So I don't want to put people down.
Right.
Because I do believe children can learn from anyone if they're willing to build the relationships, right? But it's always better. And research does show that when the child and the educator or the leader or the teacher, they look alike, that there usually is a lot of success. There's less stress. There's all kinds of things that they get results quicker.
Yeah.
And that's because they eliminated some barriers. And you can see yourself there, so the walls drop down quicker. But
you know, I did some work several years ago. Did some work with NYSED and also Education Trust, and we're looking at some numbers. And it was kind of incredible. We're talking about we were looking initially at learning loss, and so we started looking at what happens in district schools. And so when we looked in Rochester, we noticed that Black and Brown people or students, their suspension rates were so much higher than their white counterparts. And so we wonder, was it because they're city residents? But the odd thing is, when we looked at the disaggregated data for suburban schools as well, you still had higher incidence of suspension with Black or Brown children.
Nationally, I think if you look at it for, and then let's connect it to the school to prison pipeline too. Because nationally, if I remember correctly, I just was doing a presentation on equal versus equity for some college students. And I believe we make up about, as we're speaking of Black folks, we make up about 13% of the population, but accounted for, I believe, with one or more suspension, it was like 37%, where white folks might make up 48% of the population, and they only had 29% of the suspensions, right? One or more suspensions. Then you look at the prison population, and you look at, you know, again, using similar demographics of about 13% of the population, the prison population is almost 40%. And specifically, Black males are about six times more likely to be arrested or incarcerated than their white counterparts. And so when you think about it, it's interesting how the suspension data and the prison incarceration rates seem to mirror each other.
Correlation in the,
and
they
correlate, right? And so, you know, is that purposeful?
Right.
Is the redlining purposeful? Are these other things purposeful? And these systems are stacked up here. And now if all these are purposeful, you know, it's like, how do we get people to wake up and, you know, and to stop their conscious mind of making a choice to fight against something that really could be and is so good and so many opportunities and choice and freedoms and, you know, and things that you know that weren't okay, but you're fighting because it's self-serving. You're fighting for the wrong things at the right at the wrong times. Like, and I'm not even fighting for charter schools right now. I'm fighting for good education.
There you go.
And that's what I know you're fighting for.
That's right.
You know what's interesting to me is you are always you always talk about all the things that you have and all the experiences, and you've been in so many industries and done so many other things, and that you choose to do what you're doing is amazing to me. And the heart of wanting to fight for the city and fight for our kids, you know, I applaud that, Pastor. But I also want to know, like, when you had these, when you were in these other industries, were the struggles, were they the same? Were they different? And then how did you guys work towards, when you seen problems in the other industries that you're in, how did you work towards healing and correcting them so that we can put the pieces back together again?
You know what? Wow. It's crazy when I think about it. And you look at life and it leads you up to this moment. When I was in high school, I didn't have many counselors who thought well of me, even though my grades said very different and that I could go to the school of my choice. But I didn't have many counselors. I didn't have many Black or Brown counselors, but I didn't have many that looked in and really kind of poured into me. I did have one counselor by the name of Mr. Harris, who he's a dean, actually, and poured into me and told me what I could do and opened life up to me. But he was certainly not the norm. But I thank him for everything he did because he really put me on a path. I went to Union College undergrad, and at Union College, you talk about not having many black people. They were about 3% when I went. And I learned from them, but I also met some great, great people. But I've always felt other. And when I went into Manhattan after school, and I went into Manhattan and started working in that sector, and I tell this story all the time, I was interviewed for about 3 hours in this particular position, and they were a high-tech startup. And they were like, wow, we want you here. And they hired me after a three-hour interview, and they took me through the ringer. And then they hired this black kid right there across the street from the World Trade Center and One Liberty Plaza to run operations for this multinational company. And when they announced my hiring, when they said that I am the guy, my own team that I just met that day, 65 of them walked out the door. They quit that day. That's my introduction to what it means to be black in the corporate world. They all left, and I had to build up a new department. And I found myself saying, that is the way of this world. That there are folks who are not going to like you. They're not going to encourage you, but you gotta really tighten up those bootstraps and say, I know I'm better than that. I know I'm more than that. And now in the charter world, that's what our kids have to do too. That when you might not see a black or brown educator, you might not see everybody fighting in your corner, but you're better than what the narrative says. I know what you see on Channel 8, Channel 10, Channel 13, sometimes CNN. That's not really who you are. They choose the worst examples and try to make it normative of black culture, and it's just not true. And it happens in boardrooms. It happens in school rooms. It happens in street corners. They all try to find the worst in black culture, and they try to make that reality. And it's people like me and you, not fake, not phony. We don't have to be braggadocious. We're just saying there's a problem, and we're going to do something about it, doggone it.
You know, and I think that's what it is to get to this healing, yeah, is being willing to do something about it, you know, and making a conscious decision and then doing something different.
But you said about me, but seriously, and this is not tooting your horn, why Rochester? You ran Green Tech. Yeah. You can do this anywhere. You just ran a conference in Vegas. You can do this a lot easier in Texas. You can do this a lot easier in Massachusetts. Why come and do this thing here in Rochester?
You know, because this is home. You know, like I always feel a loyalty and allegiance to home. Mm. Home is, you know, I've always wanted to see a change in this city, and I've seen it throughout the years get progressively worse and not progressively better, because I think there's people that want to see change here, but I think they're in silos, they're in pockets, and I don't think that there's unification. Yeah. And then I think that there are people in power here who are worried about their next vote. They're worried about how do they maintain their offices, and they won't align. Everything's about a political alignment.
Yeah.
But you know, political alignment doesn't save kids' lives. Like, political alignment doesn't save the education system. Political alignment doesn't save, you know, and it comes down to, and you know, you hear me say it all the time, politics and money.
Yeah.
And these folks who are in these political powers are pushing for politics and money.
Yeah.
Versus
yeah.
really the change, and they're worried about, you know, oh, you can't offend this person, you can't say this. But I'm not worried about offending somebody. I'm worried about how do we do something that is going to change the narrative and change the game. Now, if that offends them, I'm okay with that.
Right.
And see, that's right. The thing is, people are sensitive and they're getting offended or getting hurt by things that are a difference of opinion. But what is your opinion rooted in?
Mm.
Is it rooted in the redlining? Hmm. Is it rooted in, you know, keeping the poor poor?
Mm.
Like, I'm not okay with that.
Right.
So I'm gonna fight against it. And not everybody likes that.
So while you're doing this fight, and in the charter school sectors where we've really put our flag down and we're gonna fight there. But let's just be honest for a second. While charter schools, on average, may do about three times better than district schools, we got to admit, overall, we're not doing well. That if we're doing 30% proficiency levels, 40% proficiency levels, in some cases 60% proficiency levels, that still says that there's 40% of kids that are not on grade level, 50% of kids not on grade level, or 60% of kids that are not on grade level. What can we do, man, to make sure that if we're going to let charter schools really be the leader and provide systems that others can model to really better the lives of young people, what can we do to make charter schools better?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, it comes down to equity again. And when I say equity, there's this, you know, I was reading some research recently by a friend of mine, actually, Dr. Amitra Berry, right? Mm-hmm. And what she shared is that one of the killers of equity is mediocrity.
Mm.
And mediocrity is, you know, just being okay with being okay.
Yeah.
And and that is, you know, the like they say, you know, when you're complacent or you have idle time, it's the devil's playground, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not about idle time here. It's about the complacency, and it's about not pushing to the next level and being okay with being okay.
Yeah.
And so there's some charter schools that are really pushing it and really pushing every day, and they have really great structures and foundations in place. And there's others that are just okay with being okay, and that's not okay. They need to push better and make sure that these that mediocrity doesn't set in. And I'm going to go back to the fact that I definitely believe that there's some charter schools that need to diversify their leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to put some leaders of color in positions, because those are the kids that they're servicing.
Yeah.
And you know what? And there's some that have done a great job with that. There's some that have done an excellent job. And I'm not saying don't hire a talented Caucasian person.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is be intentional to put people who look like the kids in front of them, because you're going to move the needle quicker or faster. But it needs to be the right person. It can't just be some Uncle Tom.
Right.
It needs to be people who are going to fight for our kids and fight for the structures that need to be in place. But they also need to take time to learn what's in place, because another thing that I find that is interesting when I go to some of these charter schools,
mm-hmm.
and not all of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are some people who are leading or running the schools very comparable to the way that they did in their district schools.
Yeah.
And so,
wow.
And so they were in a school district for whatever reason, moved over to charter school, and instead of realizing this is like you probably can't run Kodak the way you would run Xerox, right?
Right.
Two different companies.
Right.
There might be certain strategies you can bring and certain ideologies and certain thoughts, but you can't run Kodak the way you would run Xerox. It's two different companies.
Right.
And they're bringing the same mindset to their programs, and you're seeing they're getting similar results.
Yeah.
And then when you challenge them on it, you know, it doesn't always seem to be interested in hearing that. And
wow.
So I think that's, for me, again, I think it always comes down to leadership. And I think the leadership who are not getting the results they need, those are the ones they have to be honest, and they have to work towards putting some different things in place.
So what you started out with was powerful. And I'll just say it another way, that I agree 100% that mediocrity is the enemy of excellence. And we just can't accept mediocrity. And we don't need anybody to feel sorry for our children. We need them to demand more from them, because they are brilliant. They have a lot of things going on, and they can really make a difference in our lifetime. And the one reason that we're working in charter schools now is that I believe, I'm sure you believe, that this issue is absolutely fixable. If it wasn't fixable, we wouldn't be doing this. Now, I'm going to get ready to give it back to Dr. Miller to close us out, but I do want to say this. Let me go on record saying, I want the district to live. I really do. But I don't want it to live if it can't train and teach our students better. I want to see a scenario where kids thrive in the districts, thrive in private schools, thrive in charter schools. But if and only if They are really teaching you. And I'm not trying to say teach you or train you just to graduate and get a job, but they can look in your eyes and see excellence in you. And they're teaching you to be captains of industry. They're teaching you to be major on the political scene. They're teaching you how to own businesses and not just work for somebody in businesses. I want to make sure that that's what we're leaving behind. And that's our legacy. So my brother, it's been an honor just sitting at your feet and listening to getting these gems that you've been dropping on us in the realm of education. I've learned so much. I hope I shared a little bit as well. And I look forward to the next chapter of us fighting this good fight. I know that we're going to be on pause a little bit, but we're coming back stronger than ever. And we're going to really be fighting this fight because we're going to win. I'll turn it over to Dr. Paul Miller to close us out.
Hey, hey y'all, this has been an amazing season one for Moving the Needle podcast. I'm so glad and also honored and privileged to be with the Reverend Sebring Orenthal Johnson. You know, we're just the fact that we've been able to come here, come together, talk about the issues, but collaborate, put ideas together, and then try to make these ideas come to fruition. And I think that's where a lot of the healing starts is, you know, that we're coming together. We're coming together. We're not working against each other. We don't always have to agree. We can agree to disagree. But at the end of the day, it doesn't stop progress.
Right.
And we're both coming together around a common mission and vision. And our values are aligned because it's about our kids. It's about our community. Yeah. And that's where the healing is going to be, is when people are ready to come together and come around a common mission, vision, values about our community and kids and block out the other things that they know aren't right. I don't know how exactly or when it's going to happen, because a lot of people are eating off of the backs of our kids and off of the poverty, off of the things that are wrong and the struggles. But we need to work towards changing it. And I'm just honored to be able to do that with you. Bless and you. Let's continue to take on this fight. And you know what? At some point in time, somebody's going to listen. We're gonna make change, because you can't keep agitating without things starting to move.
That's right.
You know, without things starting to come up to the surface. And I think we're bringing things up to the surface. And we're going to continue to do that. We're not going to stop. We just need people who are listening to jump on the fight with us. Jump on the, you know, if and it might just start with your actions, you know, and that's how the healing, let's start with your thoughts. Let's go even to your thoughts before you get to your actions. Let's let the healing begin, especially putting education as a priority. Let's put education as a priority in the city of Rochester. Let's put it as we want our kids to go to good schools. And if the schools aren't good, whether it's charter or traditional public or private, then we need to fight against that. We need to put our money where our mouth is, and our money is our kids.
That's right.
So guess what? If you ain't performing, put your kids somewhere else and put them where they can perform, where they have the opportunity. But it's going to come with a conscious decision to put education first. That's your thoughts. Your thoughts are things. The way you think is how you act. The way you act is what you attract. So attract this education to your babies. Attract education to our city. And let's work towards healing and moving the needle.
Let's move the needle. It's been real.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network.
Provided by Vision Automotive.